was just talking about what is the way back to God. How can we approach God? With what qualifications? You see? So, one word, within one word, we can express it to have brahmacharya. Chastity of thought. If that is there, then there is hope for knowing self and knowing God. Brahmacharya means such a living which will lead us, which will qualify us to know God. So, to find God, to know God, to know oneself first of all is we should have contentment. Stop where you are for a while and know what have you to do. Pity it is we have got a man body in which we can know God. But our daily increasing outward enjoyment, we have no time to stand and see what you want to do. For instance, one man is just flowing down in the river. He is sometimes sinking under the water, again coming up. He has no time to think. You must stay somewhere on the side and then think what to do for a while. Now we are hunting after worldly thoughts, worldly enjoyments, like anything. Howling dogs, excuse me. All these outward impressions come through the outgoing faculties, which are five conscious working through five organs. They are 10 in number. Eyesight through the eyes, hearing through the ears, smelling through the nose, and just some through the tongue and some through the... So there are 10 in you. These outgoing faculties will see impressions from outside if we stop at this age. Control our outgoing faculties from receiving impressions from outside. Only that is what is required first. So unless you control the outgoing faculties, you cannot take a step forward. First of all, to stay somewhere to think where you are, what you want to do. For a while we do think we have got to see God, but so many thoughts, worldly thoughts are coming in, that we cannot, what you say, exactly clear cut see what we should do. Intellectually something, it strikes, we have to do this and but it is just flowing down the worldly enjoyments in the worldly enjoyments. So first thing is stand where you are for a while. What is our idea? On a day, two, three, just leave everything and think what you have to do. That's the first thing. Second thing would come, the chastity of thought, you see. These five decoys, lust, anger, you see, and attachment, and ego, and so many. These are five dogs assailing us. All through the outgoing faculties. If you control the outgoing faculties, we won't invade you, we won't assail us. So, just control the indriya, that's the first thing. You will avoid all these attacking, you might say, of the five, these lusts to be saved. So, for that, the worst of the dacoit is the lust. There are others too. We have to control our indriyas, you see. Lust is the lowest and the worst. Because, you see, on the control of lust, of the chastity of thought, depends the very building of the physical body, heart and brain. Any building which is raised on walls, made of sand, how lovely is this? So first, worst of the dacoits, which assail us, is the lust. First. century. Those who have not this quality, this day, that will always drag you down. And if you know, you have to know God or see the light of God, you have to rise above all these Indians. Diametrical opposite thing. Yes? It's the worst of it. Yes? So death, destiny of thought, or life of, what you say, self-control. This is the first thing. If there's a goldsmith, you've got some machinery there to just melt the gold in a crucible. If that is not there, how can you have your gold melted? So this is a necessity. Even if the goldsmith is there, he cannot do anything. If that is there and there's no goldsmith, then who can do it? So goldsmith is perseverance. Continue, don't be disheartened. Go on doing it. We are simply disheartened, it's a little progress. But the reason is we are dragged away by other things. As I told you, first thing is stay with your own contentment. Only thing you can think for a while, what is what we have to do. Then for that, to achieve success there, you must have good character. Character not only, I mean, this lust, but there are other characters too. Not to think of non-violence. Think of all the non-violence. No violence to anybody. To word, thought, and deed. Just observe truth. All failure should be eliminated. And purity of thought. Avoidance of lust. Through mind, word and deed. Then God resides in every heart. Love for all. Self. This is the outer thing we have to do. So Brahmacharya, what are the qualifications, you will say, what are the way of living which will help us to know God and to have control over violence, evil thoughts, you see, lusty thoughts, no hatred for anybody, and love for us. So how this is formed now, the question is. Take, for instance, you take a vow from today that you will tell the truth always. Continually for some months. After, say, 6 months, you would like to tell a lie, you won't be able to do it. See? Now take a vow from today, you will have pure thought. For 6 months continue, then you will be. Just if you have to do anything, you will just nonplussed. Today, think, take a vow that you are not to think evil of anybody else, nor hear anything evil about others, nor even to think about evil of others. After some months, you won't be able to think of anything. This is how the character is made, you see. So when health is lost, money is lost, nothing is lost. When health is lost, something is lost. When character is lost, everything is lost. You follow me? These things are given here. Not so vividly put forward, you see. Man's body is the highest in all creation. In this only we can know God and we can know ourselves. If we have no contentment, you are going headlong down. And after finding out something where you are interested, you see, you don't think evil or good, you are after it. You must stay for a while and think what is before you. Decide what you want to do. It may take a day, 2, 10 days, never mind. But first of all, cut off from all outside and think what is your highest ideal. When you have decided, then naturally what will be the way? When I joined the world just after my education, I wanted to decide what should be my aim of life. I'm talking 19. Even as a student I was thinking of that. But when I entered the world, naturally that was before me. It took me about 7 or 8 days, for hours together, all night, going into solitude. What should be my aim? I decided God first and world next. That was decided. Then even you take one step daily, you succeed. We have got no idea before us. We are adrift. Sometimes you think the world is all right, other things God is all right. Where world and God are not two things, you have got angle of being correct. Very clear spectacles you wear on, it is all God. But if you have colored smoky glasses, then you see the world in that way. So first, make correct a place. By keeping diaries, this is really meant underneath, at the bottom. You must make your character. If you make your character, all is calm and quiet within you. You see your face, you realize yourself, then be yourself. So these are, that is why it is said, truth is above all, and true living is still above truth. A Persian saint has said, you see, Hum khuda khayyo hum dunyaye doon in khiyalasto bhalasto. If you after realizing God, and at the same time you want to be held down, the worldly things, it is a dream, it is a whip. You cannot do it. Then you may question me, well, what about those married people? The married life is no bar to spirituality if conducted according to scriptures. All scriptures tell us marriage means taking a companion in life who will be with you in weal or woe, and both of you should know God. Because in the man's body only that is the highest thing that is before us. One duty may be of begetting children. Use this power only for that, for procreation, not for enjoyment. We waste away these things in very frivolous things. Such a married life is no part of spirituality. Christ said, husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. Swami Ramachandra said, so long as in India, why husbands and wives do not leave a pure wife, begin to pure, maybe as children, one duty, not 100% duty. To lead a life of purity as brothers and sisters, there is no hope for India. As I told you, we must have contentment. Stay somewhere to think we are young. All your pursuits, stand. Even the train runs on, stay some platform, you see. You're running like trains, but stop somewhere to think what is the goal in life. And decide one way or the other. When you're decided, then two things more are required. Brahmacharya. I explain to you what is brahmacharya. It is the control of all India. Of your eyes too, of your ears too, of your nose too, and your mouth and your arm too. If you control your outgoing faculties, none of the dakais can assail you. There are 5 dakars. Lust, attachment, greed, so on. So the control of all these is called brahmacharya. Any living in a way which will lead you to realize God. Take you to the other. So first is chastity of thought. The other is perseverance. You see, God, Rome was not built in a day. When you have God, you meet some master, you give you something to start with, maybe little or more. Each man has his own background. Yesterday I was giving about 60 men people their initiation. They were all new. They said, oh, very sweet, so much has been given to us. Well, it is there with you, people. take hundreds of years to achieve that at one life, to rise above body consciousness. You have given us all at once. To maintain that, we have to just weed out all imperfections as required by your self-introspection diary. This only will make you for character. From today, take a vow, as I told you, you will never tell lies. Always speak to. After 6 of you find you cannot tell lies. Yes. We don't care for these things, that is why we never go and like anything, you see. We are something of progress, then again repeat, then fall down, again start, again. We dig up pits in the ground, some 2 feet, some 5 feet, some 7 feet, but there is no water anymore. That becomes so. The very place we can fall down, you see. Dig one pit, go on, pit, dig it, you'll find water. Water is underneath earth, you'll find it. So these are the things required, you see, to make a man. Man is the make. And God is, man should not run after God, I tell you honestly. God is after finding some man who is a man. Who is a man of character, who lives up to the ideals of life as taught by God in men, or man in God. This is what he wanted, you see. Me, Brahmacharya. This is what is explained here. Not so vividly as I am now telling you, you see, but it's there. So those who know God, who would like to know God, they must stand somewhere to decide what they want. We not drift away by the strong currents of our desires. For a while, stay and think and decide. We are adrift. Only when you stay, only then you will be something very clear to you. Then decide what you have, your ideal desire. So what you have decided, then work for it. For that perseverance is required. And for that very thing is strong character and brahmacharya. So married and unmarried, both men can succeed. Married men only, those who are not given up to these things, every day fall down into the pit. Every day, every night, every moment they think of those things. How can they grow? Spirituality is no joke, I tell you. But thank God you get something to start with the very first day, with the grace of God. Maintain it. For that you have to keep yourself introspection diary. So this is what is required, you see. If anybody who lives up to that, the Master says, I am their servant. Any father, when he finds his son very up to the mark what he wants him to become, then he becomes his slave, you see. He rejoices to see his son. If a teacher, you see, will be very glad to find his students going up, winning laurels, yes, he will be very much pleased if the very student is just not obeying what he says and lives where it is, you see. Then do you think he will feel happy over it? How a master can feel happy over the those who come to him who do not live up to what he says? That is why Christ said, if ye love me, keep my commandments. That's all. He simply tells you to adopt a life, to live a life which is required for your highest ideal, that is to know God, to know self. And he gives you something to start with of the ideal, which leads you further to Absolute God. Thank God. So, jo main kehna tha aap logon ko sun rahe the, aaj se pran karo. Kya banna chahte ho? 1 ghanta baad jo hai, 1 din chutti le lo. 2 ghante, 4 ghante, faisla karo kya banna chahte ho. Agar koi duniya kaam, put in heart and soul, duniya ka kaam karo, koi na nahi. Usse kasbe kamal kun azize jahan se. किसी काम को करो, खूब कमाल तक पहुंचाओ, सारा जान तुम्हारे करना. पहलवान बनना तो पहलवान बनो. द होल वर्ल्ड विल आफ्टर यू, लुकिंग आफ्टर यू. नाउ डेज दारा पहलवान है, किंग काम, सीधे They are before the eyes of everybody. Aryan Bano, Bhakti Chhatra. Are bhai, insan, the highest ideal uncha, Prabhu ko paana. Be a man of God. So bhai, kuch karna chahiye. Matthe tekne se kaam nahi banega. I tell you. Can we have a obeisance and go glorifying your guru or master and not living up to what he says? It's not good. You can deceive the world not to him who is in you. Very clear cut in you, without any reservation. This thing has helped me in my life and can help you also. I wish you all become ambassadors more than me. This is my wish. But if you live up to it, I'll wash your feet. तो ये बातें जो आपको समझाई जाती हैं समझने के लिए नहीं पल्ले बंद और लेव करो तो है जीवन बतलाए कि वट यू आर सेंट फ्लावर सेलर शुडनर से माय सेंट इज वेरी परफ्यूम लेट द परफ्यूम सेंट इज सेल्फ रेडिएट परफ्यूम अदर्स में नो ओनली बाय परफ्यूम दिस इज रेडिएशन इफ यू आर गुड एट हार्ट रेडिएशन विल बी गुड इफ यू आर नॉट गुड एट हार्ट दैट इज रेडिएशन विल बी बैड So we want to be good before the eyes of others, that is deceiving your own self and deceiving all others, but you cannot deceive your own self, the God is within you. This is what you learn here. You have come here to learn. Learn and live up to them. You simply, what you say, fill your brain with all these facts and don't live up to them, that's what is good. The food which is digested, that will give you strength. Which is not digested, that will give you disease. So, bhaiyo, yahan aane ka matlab, ek ideal jeevan ko paana hai, uske liye zariya. Aage aap kehte ho, koi samjhata nahi, kitna khol kar samjhaya jata. Character aaj se banana shuru karo. Do me kisi ko dhokha nahi do. Dil saaf ho jaye. अगर कोई आदमी तुमको बुरा कहता है तो कहने दो किसी कहने से बुरा नहीं होगा अगर वो आप में कमी है उसका शुक्रिया अदा करो बी थैंकफुल टू हिम ही इज पॉइंटेड आउट और द डियरेस्ट फ्रेंड विल टेल यू अबाउट योर शॉर्टकमिंग्स आर ए एनिमी यू सी इफ दैट इज विद इन यू देन जस्ट टेक ऑफ दैट थिंग लीव दैट ऑल You can eliminate all those things from you. If they not they pray for him, that's all. God bless him. So ye baatein bhai nahi zaruri. Most important. We do not care to live up to that. That is why sometimes we progress, other times we don't progress. So there is hope for everybody to fall in sin is mandate, but to remain there is devilish. आज से करें फैसला करो क्या बनना चाहते हो वैसे ये नहीं मतलब कि तुम दुनिया के काम जो काम करो अब योर लाइवलीहुड जस्ट नर्स योर चिल्ड्रन एवरीथिंग हैव ए कंपेनियन टू हेल्प यू ऑन द वे बैक टू गॉड दैट्स गुड आइडिया लिव एन आइडियल डिसाइड व्हाट यू वांट टू बिकम नेक्स्ट ऑल जो कुछ मैंने कहा जाकर आज फैसला करो घंटा दो घंटे चार घंटे एक दिन छुट्टी ले लो डिसाइड व्हाट यू वांट फॉर आवर फाइनल व्हाट यू वांट टू बिकम व्हेन यू हैव डिसाइडेड देन हैव गुड लाइफ गुड करेक्टर परसिवियर फॉर अ वाइल हैव कंटेंटमेंट व्हेन यू हैव डिसाइडेड देन गो ऑन विद इट स्टेप बाय स्टेप विल लीड यू टू द गोल दैट्स ऑल Of course, it will take time. Time factor is necessary. Those who have got good background, they start from there. Those who have not good background, they start and go perseverance in pursuing that thing, then they can go ahead even as compared with those who have got good background but do not pursue it. So there is no hard and fast rule for any man. How long will it take? That depends on the perseverance and this true life is you. I was just talking about charity. I would use the word charity now as compared with love. Love can be compared to the outward dust thing. So charity involves, you see, need, complete obedience. Such obedience always mind raises up no doubt. Self-surrender. Complete. And be respectful. Otherwise only this charity which turns into love, I would say now, that has background of ego, that transcends all laws, you see. And that very love makes us to control to who we love, you see. So love is only love when it becomes charity, I would say. Complete obedience. If you love me, keep my commandments. That keeping of the commandments should be from a heart, out of complete self-surrender. That you will be able to do only when you are convinced at heart that to whom you are going to obey is perfect, is more wise than, is wiser than you. He knows all the pros and cons of the whole thing. So such like prema is always appreciated by Master. I quoted my instance once. The disciple always asks the Master some favors. This is the favor I asked, I wanted. Favor from you, Master, I want this love, charity. And that should be most respectful. With complete self-surrender. When he got that letter, he put that letter over his breast. He said, I also want that. So I was just telling you, love your Master. Keep his commandments without any ifs and buts. Complete self-surrender, because he knows what is to be done, otherwise we suffer. I was just quoting the instance of Mansur. He said, I am God. He put to the gallows, to the cross. Shams Tabriz went to somebody. Somebody called his son was dead, died. He said, now, make him alive. He said, name of God I ask you to. Stand up. In the name of the Prophet, I ask you to stand up. That body did not raise up. He said, I order. Raise up. Then he rose up. And what was the result? His skin was dry. So love is only love when respectful, with complete self-surrender. Such a love will. You lose your ego. That will appeal to the heart of the God in man. Generally we love, we transcend the bounds of respect because we have got no surrender at heart. That results in this respectfulness. Sometimes we vie with the Master, sometimes we want to overrule the Master. Because we are not convinced of the Master that is more wise than us. He is wiser than us. At least that much should be there. You may not call him a God for you, but you cannot tell. Our Master, sometimes people ask him, well, how should we take you? He said, take me as your elder brother, as your father, as your teacher, as your well-wisher, and do as I order you. And according to that, when you go up, you rise up body consciousness, you see His greatness there, then you may call me anything you like. Only then you can be convinced. When you don't go in. And outer criterion is what? He must be able to give you something to start with. That's the only criteria.
Good morning and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was composed of two morning talks, The Way Back to God and Love with Surrender. They were recorded on January 14th and 15th, 1968, in Delhi, India. Our reader this morning is Scott Stewart. Hello, Scott.
Hello, everyone. We will continue reading Master's great work, A Great Saint, Babaji Jaimal Singh. I will pick up where we left off last time we read on page 52. During his military career, Babaji Jaimal Singh, whenever he had any leave, spent part of it at Guma. Though detached from worldly ties, he was yet very fond of his mother. On one occasion, he was to tell a devoted disciple that in their past three lives, he and his mother had enjoyed the same relationship. On such occasions, when he came to his ancestral home, it was his wont not to waste time in needless gossip and idling, but to proceed to the banks of the Bayas and sit hidden in the gullies that the wayward river had created by its freakish changes of course, and continue lost in spiritual devotion for days, subsisting only on a few dry chapatis that he brought from home and hung on a kikar tree. At other times, when he was at home, he would walk down to Dera Baba Namdev and carry on his meditations there, or in a dugout in the courtyard of the family house. This house and dugout were preserved long after Babaji's death, and his successor, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj, would sometimes take his closest disciples to Gumant and show them the spot where his great guru used to sit for meditation. In particular, he would point out the peg on the wall behind the dugout where Babaji would tie up his hair in order to ward off sleep during Abhyasa. Just as his fellow soldiers learned in time to respect and revere Baba Jaimal Singh, in like manner, the inhabitants of Guman came gradually to recognize his great spiritual stature. His early childhood devotion had already become a local legend, and whenever the saint Sipahi came, the local folk flocked to see him, and his company was sought by young and old, whosoever was spiritually inclined. Mistry, Alahi Baksh, and Bhai Lena, who had been his boyhood friends, were the first to seek his spiritual guidance. He commended their zeal, but said that the time was not yet ripe for their instruction. Many years later, when he felt that the hour had come, he put them on the inner path, and they were among his earliest Guman disciples. After his retirement, Babaji, on coming to his native village, continued his old habit of going to Bayaz Riverside for his sadhanas. The years immediately following the close of his army life were largely spent in this manner. Once while at Amritsar with Hakim Nand Lal, he mentioned that he was in search of a quiet place in the wilderness where he could settle down and carry on his meditation. Lala Khazana Mal, a money lender who was also present, suggested that such a place could be found between the villages of Vairakh and Balsarai on the banks of Bayas, where he carried on his business. Babaji, who had already been attached to the area, accepted the suggestion. This was the place where Kahan, a God-intoxicated man, met Babaji in his early life, saying he was preparing a place for him in the days to come. Meanwhile, Baba Chanda Singh, who too had received instructions at the feet of Swamiji, passed away. In his last moments, Bibi Ruko, a very devoted disciple, asked him what was to become of her. "Fear not, my child," replied the sage. "Another greater than myself shall take care of you." "Where shall I find him, sir?" asked Ruko. "Find him? No. You shall have no need, for he himself will seek you out." Shortly before Babaji came to settle down on the banks of Bayaz, Bibi Ruko was then living at Vairakh and was fairly well advanced spiritually. Told the villagers that her protector was coming to live there. When Baba Jamal Singh arrived, he found a small hut built out of straw and branches for him, a bare 8 feet by 8 feet, and he began living there. Soon after, Khazana Mal arrived, and hearing that Babaji had come, came to see him. He had the hut plastered with mud and a cave dug out. It was the year 1891, and Babaji gave himself up and redoubled zeal to his spiritual sadness. He would enter the cave and stay in it for days on end, sometimes as long as a fortnight, without any thought for food, wrapped in inner samadhi. Though Babaji shunned the public gaze, yet musk cannot be hidden in the dark. He might have no care for earthly name and fame, but name and fame fell to his share in spite of this. Fame of his spiritual greatness had already spread from Guman to the neighboring villages. And going for darshan to a holy man is an ancient institution in this land of the sages. Where there had been wilderness, people began appearing in ever-growing numbers, and regular satsangs began to take place. How could Babaji turn away those who had come to his door? In all simplicity and humility, he taught them the spiritual message that he had received at the feet of Swamiji. Many a moneyed man begged him to be permitted to build puka quarters for him, but he, rich in his own humility, continued in his simple, austere ways. To undertake to write the biography of a saint is to attempt the impossible. If it is to do real justice to its subject, it must follow the inner movements that defy observation, analysis, and formulation. You may take up the life of a great artist, writer, soldier, or statesman, and if you are a man of deep understanding and imagination, you may reincarnate it in words giving a vivid picture of the psychological conflicts and resolutions involved. But the saints at one leap have passed from this world to another and have cast their tents in inaccessible realms. Few men have reached there, and those that have entered have been wrapped in silence. When the pen set to picturing this station, it broke in pieces and the page was torn. The study of the progress of the mystic soul is beyond the reach of ordinary mortals, and those that have been on the inner journey can only speak in metaphor and parable. For how else can the language of common humanity be compelled to express experiences for which it was never fashioned? The history, then, of a master soul, as fired by a restless zeal which moves from plane to plane, must remain an unwritten one. At best, it can only give the husk of outer events and happenings to suggest the unusual nature of the spiritual experiences they unfold. And once such a soul has attained full enlightenment and become one with the infinite, its history is no longer its own, but is the history of those that came under its spell and were liberated from worldly bondage. The story of Babaji's life after his great search had been crowned with success is the story not so much of his own development as of the many souls that benefited from him. Thus, Mian Chirag Din relates the story of his maternal grandfather, Mistri Alahi Baksh, of whom we have spoken already. Alahi, a childhood friend of Babaji, showed great interest in spiritual matters and would discuss them with him when he, Babaji, would come home on leave from his regiment. Once when Babaji, known in his village as Bai, was in Guman, Alahi saw him approaching in the company of a sadhu. A lively discussion was in progress, and when Alahi wished to know its theme, he was told that the sadhu insisted that Brahmand was the highest of all heavens, in spite of the fact that Babaji assured him there were higher realms. On hearing this, Alahi turned to the sadhu and with solemn conviction said, "Reverend sir, Bai Ji is absolutely right. There are indeed regions higher than those of which you know." This silenced the sadhu, and he went away. When the friends were left alone, Babaji thanked Alahi for his friendly intervention and added, "But it is strange that you never told me of your access to the inner spiritual realms. Whoever said I had access to them? But then how could you speak with such conviction?" "Oh, Bai, I only know that a man of realization can never utter a falsehood. So how could I doubt what you said?" Babaji was so moved by his friend's spontaneous and deeply rooted faith that he told him, "I shall unlock to you treasures of which few ever dream and which fewer attain." He took him straight to a nearby pond and initiated him into the Surat Shabd Yoga on its bank. However, Alahi had yet to learn the value of the gift he had received. Greatly interested in spiritual questions, he continued the practices taught to him by Muslim fakirs and failed to attend to his friend's instructions. When Babaji came to Guman again, he sent for Alahi and asked him what he had done with the inner key that he had been given to him. When Alahi told him that he had done nothing and even forgotten what he had been told, Babaji was displeased. "I give you the greatest riches that man can ever hope to have, and you treat them with such scant regard." He scolded and slapped him thrice on the face. As soon as his hands fell upon the repentant Alahi's face, his inner eye was opened and his spirit rose to higher worlds. From that day onward, Alahi Baksh began devoting himself exclusively to the Surat Shabd Yoga and would daily visit his peer, or guru, and bow in reverence before him. When a great one takes a wandering soul under his wing, his grace is not confined only to his immediate disciple, but radiates to those near and dear to him. Such a powerful spiritual influence fell upon Alahi Baksh's family that in spite of their Muslim relations and brothers' taunts and scorn, many of its members sought instruction at Babaji's feet. Alahi's son-in-law, Hussein Baksh, was among the first to take to the path. He was very devoted to Babaji and displayed great love and reverence. His guru was pleased with him and treated him and his sons, Ghulam Qadir and Chirag Din, with affection. Mian Chirag Din, in his manuscript account, relates how the Great One would joke with them and receive them at all hours when they were youngsters. Once when he had gone to Guman and was resting, the boys sought him out there. Bibi Daya received them at the door, and when she learned that they had come for her son, she got a little irritated. "Ah, when you grow up," she explained, "and have children of your own, never make the mistake of educating them. I am a mother, and I know too well from my experience how difficult it is to cope with when a son becomes a god." Babaji at this juncture called out from within, and the boys went in. He patted them fondly and remarked, "You are always welcome. Do not mind what mother says. A true master is ever with his disciples and protects him not only in life, but equally in death. O Nanak, free yourself from worldly companions and seek the friendship of a true saint. They shall forsake you even in life, but he shall not leave you even after death." Guru Nanak. "Take hold, O soul, of one who knows all inner planes, for he shall befriend thee in life as well as in death." Maulana Rumi. To witness the last moments of a disciple of Babaji was to be convinced of his genuine greatness. Countless stories are told of the strange happenings marking the end of those initiated by the Bayas saint. We may quote the eyewitness account left by Chirag Din of his father's death as an outstanding example. We translate from his Urdu manuscript recording his family's contact with Babaji and some anecdotes he heard from the great master about his own early life. Once Babaji had gone to Guman after collecting his pension. Our father, meanwhile, had passed away. We went to the Great One and related to him the sad news. He consoled us and straightaway proceeded to the spot where the dead body lay. On reaching there, he said, "Oh, Hussein Baksh, why have you been in such haste? I would have come and you could have had my darshan." As these words were uttered, our dead father opened his eyes and sat up. Our mother, frightened, inquiring if anything was the matter. "Nothing," he said. "The master has come and I am going." He then lay down and was gone. Another very interesting anecdote relates how while Babaji was visiting the village of Daliwal, Atar Singh, a local inhabitant carried him across a nearby seasonal stream, swollen with recent rains, and back again. The sage was so pleased with the Jat's selfless service that he declared, "O Atar, you have taken me across this little streamlet. I, in return, shall take you across the sea of life." He then initiated him into the divine science, and from that day the latter was a changed man. He would take his cattle for grazing as of yore, but on reaching the meadows he would let them go and himself got busy with his spiritual sadhanas. He no longer used a stick to control his herd, but would manage it with a piece of cloth, and soon became known for his extraordinarily kind treatment of his animals. One day he returned rather early. On reaching home, he told his daughter-in-law, "Who was there? Child, get everything done quickly. Storm will soon be here." He then went to take his bath, and on returning, a bed on the floor, and called all those in the house to his side. He bade them goodbye, explaining, "My time is drawing to a close, and I must soon be gone." Everyone was taken aback at these strange words. How could the speaker talk of dying when he was apparently in good health? At last, his daughter-in-law, collecting herself, asked leave to send for his son. "There is no need," he answered. "My master has come, and I cannot keep him waiting." Saying these words, he lay down, closed his eyes, and his spirit left for its heavenly home. Babaji was not only chary himself of revealing his spiritual riches, but strictly enjoined his disciples to exercise the same restraint. When they transgressed his instructions, they never escaped chastisement. Thus, Chirag Din relates the story of a blind Hafiz, learned man, of Dariwala. He once attended a discourse of Babaji at the town of Kapurthala, and when it was over and they were talking to each other, the Hafiz remarked, "The wise have said that he who has read the holy book thrice attains heaven." "Heaven is very far, my dear fellow," replied Babaji. "Those that have entered it alone can tell." The assurance of the sage's voice moved Hafiz to request instruction. His wish was granted, and he sedulously cultivated the lesson that had been given to him till it bore fruit. He then proceeded to Mian Sahib at Batala, his former teacher, and told him that all he had taught him was a hoax and a lie. He would often visit the mosque, and intolerant of the pious sham practiced there, he secretly break the earthen pots and burn the prayer mats. His fellows soon discovered the miscreant and complained to his guru. The blind man was called, and Babaji rebuked him. "Sir," replied his disciple, "I cannot stand hypocrisy, and besides, I am in the right." His master, however, told him that in the future he must learn to contain himself and exercise restraint. But the advice went unheeded, and Hafiz soon began indulging his whim once again. A group of Muslims came to wait upon the sage and bitterly protested, complaining that he had taught his disciple to turn heathen. At this, Babaji answered, "Does the man still persist in his foolishness? Well, if he will not stop troubling you, do not be angry, for you will soon be rid of him." Sure enough, a few days later, the Hafiz passed away. Similar stories are told about other advanced disciples. A sadhu who came to live in Bayas made rapid headway, and his soul would soar at will to Daswan Dwar. He could not restrain himself, however, and would begin talking of the inner glories to whoever would pass his way. Babaji was upset and told him that he must learn to discipline his tongue, but the sadhu, confident of himself, continued unheeding. The inner curtain was rung down, and for full 16 years he was denied inner access until his very last days, when Babaji's illustrious successor, Baba Samwan Singh, gave him his blessings. Baba Nizam-ud-Din, in a like situation, was to experience a similar check. His son, in a beautifully written Urdu account, narrates how his father, who was the 16th initiate of Babaji, according to the records at Bayas, made very speedy inner progress. In a few months, he had gained great powers and had developed a remarkable clairvoyance. But instead of locking his gifts within himself, as taught by his teacher, he began displaying his spiritual wares and would freely tell those around of future happenings or of what was taking place at distant towns. When Babaji was told of this, he turned to Bibi Ruko and said, "This man has ascended very rapidly indeed, but has not been able to digest what he has got." From that day on, Nizam-ud-Din, who had failed to shutter his lips, found that his inner eye had been curtained. His sorrow was great, but trusting the grace of his master, he took to his spiritual practices with redoubled energy. His wife, too, got initiated, and with the passage of time, great blessings were bestowed upon them. And it was evident to those that came into contact with them that they were no ordinary mortals, but never again did Nizam-ud-Din flaunt his spiritual powers. The entire life of Baba Nizam-ud-Din and his family was written by his son, is one long saga of the blessings of having a true master. But society is not kind to a living saint, nor to those that are lost in their love. Nizam-ud-Din's devotion to his Sikh peer soon won him the animosity of his relatives and Muslim brethren. He was turned kafir, they said, and lost no opportunity abusing and persecuting him. He himself was not to be deterred, and whenever there was any talk of Muslim and non-Muslim, he would recite the Persian couplets. Isht ra ba kafir o moman, na bashad intayaj, ein sukum barmamber o mehrab, mai bahad nivisht. Love makes no distinction between the infidel and the faithful. Let these words be written on every pulpit and arch. Mard e huji, mard e huji. Ra talab, ka Hindu, ka Turko, ka Arab. If you wish to go on the inner pilgrimage, then seek an inner guide, be he a Hindu, a Turk, or an Arab. But for all his patience, matters grew only worse, and when things were not to be borne any longer, Babaji advised his beloved disciple to shift his hearth and home to Multan. It was there that he spent the rest of his long life and would often go to Bayaz to meet his master. When after 1903 he was no more, he would visit Baba Sawan Singh, his spiritual successor, who held him in great esteem. It is not for us to dwell at length on the many blessings bestowed upon him, his sons, grandsons, and great-grandsons. Suffice it to say that the whole family held Babaji in great reverence and, as enjoined by him, kept up all the traditions of their faith while practicing the discipline he had taught. When his wife passed away, she foretold her approaching end a month before the date, at which time she was in good health. When her hour drew near, she took touching leave of her husband. I have served you the best of my ability for 60 years. Now grant me leave for my going away. My master and Maharaj Sawan Singh Ji are waiting for me. Nizam-ud-Din asked her to hold his arm and focused his attention inward. The whole family was looking on as the old couple sat, wrapped in meditation. 20 minutes later, the husband opened his eyes. Now you may go, he said, and his wife peacefully passed away. Next morning, when her hearse had to be carried to the burial grounds, some of the relations refused to lift the bier on the ground that the lady was a kafir. But the neighbors knew her to be kind and generous and a true daughter of God and helped to carry the coffin to the graveyard. Baba Nizam-ud-Din did not tarry long after. His end was similarly known before it came, and when his bier was to be carried, his brethren's hearts had been softened and they joined the procession. Many a fakir and sadhu witnessed his burial, and as his remains were being lowered, the verse was chanted, Hum Nashini Sat E Ba Aulia Beter Asad Sala Tat Bi Ria. A moment's contact with a saint is worth more than a million austerities. Even to this day, in spite of the division of the country that came with independence, and in spite of the communal hatreds unleashed in its wake, the descendants of Baba Nizam-ud-Din have kept up the faith and often visit Sawan Ashram at Delhi to keep alive their association with the Path of the Masters or the Sultan-ul-Askar, as their enlightened forefather called it in the terminology of the Sufi fakirs. Babaji's grace flowed to all. It was not only his disciples who benefited from him, but many others who merely happened to catch his eye by their simplicity, purity, and selfless service. He had read many a scripture in his childhood and youth, but he spoke not from learning, but from direct inner experience. There was inexplicable sweetness and charm in what he had said, and an irresistible sense of conviction and assurance. Once four great pundits, who had dabbled in various yogic practices, began wrangling and debating about the nature of the inner planes, they based themselves on their spiritual study, and the controversy they waged was lively indeed. Hearing of a Jat saint of great attainment, they came to Babaji's door. He heard what they had to say, and then lucidly explained to them the nature of the spiritual regions, reconciling what had appeared to be contradictory viewpoints, and resolving all their doubts to their satisfaction. The pundits went away, but one of them, a true seeker, who had caught the saint's bait, returned and begged for initiation. The boon was granted. He practiced his sadhanas with regularity, but to little avail. "Ah, sir, bless me with some inner vision," he begged. "Do you think I do not wish you well?" came the reply. "I wish to the Lord that you reach Sat Lok this day, but you are not yet ripe and would not be able to bear the strain." The prayer was repeated many a time, but Babaji always gave the same answer. One day, while he was going alone to collect his pension, the pundit met him at a lonely spot. "Sir, this is a wilderness, and no one is by. Bless me now. At least give me a glimpse of the realms within. No more, that I may rest in certainty." "You will not be able to stand it, and the strain will be too much for you." "What does it matter, even if I lose my life, if only I may see what is within?" Babaji could refuse no longer. He asked the pundit to sit down in meditation and focus his gaze upon him. The pundit's soul was forcibly drawn up into the higher realms. When Babaji, by his own will, brought it down to physical consciousness, the pundit fell sobbing at his feet. "I thought my life was being wrenched out of me, and a million lightnings fell upon my head. Oh, sir, forgive me my foolishness. We mortals are indeed unworthy." "What is there to forgive?" replied the sage. "It is you who must forgive yourself, for it is not I who suffered. Now go and make the most of your time, for you have only 3 more years to live." From that day onward, the pundit concentrated on his meditations, and 3 years later, as predicted, passed away. Such tales, however, legion, and whole volumes would not suffice to sing the glory and grace of a true saint. So passing them by, we will concern ourselves with the most important single event in the annals of Babaji's divine ministry, the initiation of Sawan Singh Ji, who was later to carry on his mission. The true story is told by the great disciple himself. We quote from his letters, which have been published in Spiritual Gems. "I was fond of satsang and Paramarth spirituality from my very childhood. I often associated with sadhus and religious people, and this in part was because my father was fond of sadhu seva. Then while in service, I studied Vedanta and discussed Vedanta with people, especially with the sadhus who on their way to Kashmir stayed at Dharamsala, rest house, near my house. Later, I was transferred to Muri Hills. One day, as I was supervising my work, I saw an old Sikh going up a hill along with a middle-aged lady. When I noticed him, I thought he had probably come in connection with some case in the commissioner's court. Little did I think that he was to be my master. He was no other than Babaji himself, and the lady was Bibi Ruko. This I did not know at the time, but found out later that Babaji said to Bibi Ruko, referring to me, 'It is for his sake that we have come here,' to which Bibi Ruko replied, 'But he has not even greeted you.' Babaji said to her, 'What does the poor fellow know yet? On the 4th day from this, he will come to us.' On the 4th day, I went to attend satsang. Babaji was at the time explaining the meaning of Japji Sahib. Well, I started my volley of questions, so much so that the audience got tired and began to feel restless at the large number of questions I had put. The sacred book Sar Bachan was lying there, and I objected to the name of Radhaswami, and Babaji explained from the book itself what Radhaswami meant. Radha ad surat ka nam, Swami ad shabd nij nam. Radha is the name of the first or primal ray of surat, consciousness. Swami is the original source of the stream of Shabd. Now he wanted to point out the way, but I had read Vedanta. When I read Gurbani, my opinion was different. When I read Gita, my opinion was again different, and I was unable to come to a decision. At last, I applied for 8 days' leave to enable me to study the teachings of Babaji. He advised me to read Kabir Sahib's Anurag Sagar. I immediately ordered 8 copies of this book from Bombay so that I could also give some to my friends, Baba Hari Ram, Gulab Singh, etc., to read and comment on it. After several conferences with Babaji, I was thoroughly convinced and received initiation from him on the 15th day of October, 1894. We have come to the end of our reading. Again, we were reading a great saint, Baba Jaimal Singh, and I will pick up the next time we read on page 63. Thank you, Father. We pray in thanks for all that you have taught us, and we pray to always live up to what you ask of us. Amen.
Thank you, Scott, for reading Master's poignant, beautiful words. There were 84 participants at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Divine Master, for bringing us together to receive your guidance and blessings.
So always abide what your Master says, the God in him, you see. So whether people admire you or not, don't care for them. So you must abide by the teaching, by the saying, by the orders of the Master to live up to it. Irrespective whether the world admires you or otherwise.